Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And we are in the year 2023! Yay! Happy New Year, listeners. Welcome. A brand new year is upon us here at Friends of the Force, and we're entering our almost fourth year doing the podcast. Or, I mean, we are in our fourth year, but it's going to be entering our fifth year. Right?
When did you start?
2019.
So
this will be the 4-year anniversary. 21,
and we're in our fifth year.
We're entering our fifth year.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be
anniversary.
Like fourth. It's like, you know,
going
I'm on
into
my
five.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like our fourth birthday, but like you're in your fifth trip around the sun.
Whoa.
Because you were zero before you were one, you know? So we're on our fifth trip around the sun here at Friends of the Force. And that's really good news because that means we've been friends for that long.
Yeah.
And we haven't completely mucked it up. And I think that's a pretty big deal because, you know, there are some friendships that just don't last this long.
No. Although don't jinx it because who knows? Who knows what year number five will bring?
You're just going to be so upset with how much J-Hope I talk about that you're just going to unfriend me one of these days. Gonna be like, Sarah, come on.
It's possible. It's possible. Who knows? At the rate we're going,
I'm gonna have to switch biases in order to. you're like Sarah. That is actually not the point.
Well, here we are, and the very first thing we're talking about this year, whereas last year was the Book of Boba Fett to start
we're
the
still
new
on
year.
The
we are
bees
now we're still on the bees.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is Friends of the Force, which is F and B.
No, Brad.
You're my BFF.
Stop it. The book, I get it. Thank you. We are BFFs.
Oh, Book of Boba
the
Fett.
The Book of Boba Fett, and now we're on The Bad Batch.
We went from boff to bub.
Well, I don't know if it's a good omen or a bad omen that we're starting off our year once again with a B letter series name.
It just means that there's going to be more fire alarms in our 2023 that get pulled unexpectedly when you
literally take that back. I'm not
having a great time.
I'm literally not joking right now. I literally need you to take that back. Retract those words right now. No fire alarms for us or our lovely listeners. Absolutely none for any of us. If the fire is happening, we need to be pulling the fire alarm. However, if the fire is not happening, no fire alarms for anybody. I hope that nobody has an unexpected fire alarm in the year 2023 in which there is no fire. Okay? We're not playing around this year. I'm serious. This is serious business, Brad. No fire alarms.
Although there might be a couple fires because it's going to be a very lit year for us here on the podcast.
Oh my God. That transition was so 2019 at the latest, but I applaud you for doing it anyway.
I know, right? You know, it is the year of the rabbit.
Yeah,
but this is the year of the transition here. I'm going all in on the transitions this year. So
I don't know how that
get ready. Buckle
I don't know
in.
How that links together, but okay.
I don't know. It felt right. But we are not going to go at a rabbit's pace here. Let's get right into it. So
okay, that was good though. You brought it all together.
We're talking about The Bad Batch today, episodes 1 and 2, and full disclosure up front, we're going to be covering the series a little differently for season 2. In case you missed our episodes for season 1, we did it week to week, and this time around, we're going to be covering them in chunks. Just allows us to free up our schedule a little bit to do some other things during the next couple of months, while also still getting to cover the show. And we were fortunate to get some of the screeners, so we're still making our way through those episodes. However, we haven't watched all of them yet because we want to take each episode chunk, like without having seen future episodes, so we can speculate, we can maybe not know what's ahead, and keep some of the surprise fresh for us. So there should be about 5 episodes total that we're doing this season. We're going to do this season premiere, the next couple, and then the mid-season, next couple after that, and then a finale at the end of March, right before Star Wars Celebration. Holy crap.
Yeah, I can't believe that brings us all the way up to celebration time. wow. But yeah, this is how we figured out how to cover it, just because I think like the 16 episodes last year for this show was a lot on our schedules. And we didn't get to do some of the things we really wanted to do. So hopefully this will free up our creative brains a little bit so we both get to talk about the show with all of you and get to do some other stuff both personally and within the podcast. So that should be exciting. So thanks for joining us on this ride again. And I'm gonna bring up the elephant in the room. And it's the fact that the series doesn't have a name. Don't worry about it, is my thought. Don't worry about it. This is just the Friends of the Forest Bad Batch recap review episodes, okay? I know we love to name things. We haven't named this. We're literally not gonna worry about it. Okay? Yeah. Okay, listeners.
We can't name everything. We gotta save some of that creative naming convention energy for other things that are happening later in the year, next year. So
Right. So don't worry about it. You probably were really worried about it. And I'm just going to tell you, just don't.
Just don't worry about it. Yeah.
Thanks for coming to our PSA.
All you need to know is this is Friends of the Force. There's two F's in there. So,
not Friends O the Force. Like we're
no,
Irish. There's we're friends Irish. Of the Force.
Or Irish doppelgangers are out there and they've started a podcast, Friends O Force. We're gonna have a collaboration with them later this year when I go to London.
Really, objectively, very funny.
They're gonna travel in from Ireland to London.
Okay. We have to stop. This is too far.
That's the panel I submitted at Celebration. Okay,
Friends of the Force plus Friends of
Friends of Force so happy hour it. Star Wars happy. Celebration happy hour. Okay, anyways, we're discussing two episodes today: the 2-part season premiere, Spoils of War. Written by Jennifer Corbett and directed by Stuart Lee, and then Ruins of War, which is directed by Nathaniel Villanueva and written by Gina Lucita Monreal. So some familiar directors there, first-time writer Gina, and obviously Jennifer Corbett being the showrunner of the series. So Matt McNevitz is also still the story editor on the series, which is great. So a lot of the same crew is back from season one, but I also think it's cool that they have another writer in the mix, another woman, especially a woman of color, which is a good thing. So that's always promising. And still no Bosco Wing, I gotta say. I was hoping maybe one of these first two episodes would be Bosco Wing. Where's Bosco? I know.
Yeah, where are our Bosco bops? You know, like we're waiting. but you know, I think we need to bring this up kind of before we have our conversation, because this conversation is really important with regards to the show. And
yeah,
we definitely have a lot of feelings about it, and maybe despite not being the very best representatives of this conversation, we definitely want to be a part of it and talk about it. So I'll stop skirting around it, and I just want to talk about hashtag unwhitewash the Bad Batch. There is an official Twitter account at unwhitewashTBB and the hashtag hashtag unwhitewashTBB. And this is a conversation that began in the first season of the show when it became glaringly apparent that our Clone Force 99 was much lighter skinned than Temuera Morrison and, you know, the other like nameless clones throughout the series and in the Clone Wars. And this is like pretty important for a number of reasons. One, it's so easy not to do this considering there's already a very clear model of the clone, you know, like, and who they're based upon, and it is not a white man. So yes. And also, you know, when you're talking about like enhanced clones, people who are better than the rest, and you know, like special, more special than the other clones, them being all lighter skinned than their peers who do not necessarily have names or the character arcs in this story, it's really not the best look or message to send. So this is definitely something that we're thinking about as we're watching the show and that we are reading about, and you know, continuing to push for. So I just wanted to bring that up. I would really recommend seeking out those sources. The Twitter account retweets a lot from the community and shares resources as well about, you know, what this means, what's going on here. And I think that's really valuable to continue to read about and to continue to push for, because I imagine that the show will get further seasons. And there is a conversation about the lead time on animation and how early animation gets done, you know, before it is put out into the world. So I think we should continue to talk about this because, you know, season three is probably where they can make a real substantial change.
Yeah, so, yeah, because season two was, I think, pretty much almost done by the time season one aired. I was hoping that there would at least be some maybe changes made retrospectively for season two. But yeah, I think season three will definitely be the biggest measure of how much, you know, the animation team has been listening to fans talk about this, because it is an important conversation. And I know a lot of like critics to this say like, oh, well, they're supposed to be altered clones, that's why they look different. And it's like, it's just not a good justification for whitewashing characters who are based off of a Maori man. So like, I hope that that changes in the future. And I know I do want to also shout out our friend Maggie Lovett, who's over at Collider, for actually asking a question about the fan-driven movement to director Brad Rau. And Brad Rau did say that they listened to those concerns. And he says, quote, before season one came out, we're always doing this. We went back to look at the skin tones and we made some corrections to make sure that we're being true to the legacy of the clones in Clone Wars. Absolutely 100%. End quote. And while that is being said, I don't necessarily see it still. Like I don't see the change. Mm-hmm. So I'm not totally satisfied by that answer. But again, like, looking forward to season three, I hope that they take a lot of this into consideration, because it's taking a little bit of the excitement out of the show for me, to be honest. Going into another season of it, I still obviously love the characters and love a lot of the story beats and everything, but it definitely is kind of, like you said, an elephant in the room that I just like can't look away from at this point. So but again, thank you for, you know, I'm glad that Collider was asking those sorts of questions, and I'll link that article as well, because there was Arzu Amin did a good write-up of it, of the whole movement and kind of what's been going on with this. So
yeah, and I also want to say, like, today, which is the day that the episodes aired, there was also a poster that came out, and it was a cool poster. It was like the regular clone, and then like over and over and over, and then each of the members of the Bad Batch were kind of interspersed within that, and was like, try and find the members of the Bad Batch. And I gotta say, some of them were glaring because their skin tone was so light. So while that poster was like so cool in terms of visual style and concept, it really pointed out the kind of importance of this conversation, both within Star Wars and beyond. So yeah, so we will be talking about these episodes and, you know, and getting excited about them and having conversations about them. But we do just want to make sure that this is part of our conversation, and that we will be continuing to share resources about Unwhitewash the Bad Batch in our show notes for this season. So, yeah, thank you for having this conversation with us and for being here. Yep, yeah, that's it.
And like Sarah said, by no means are we like the exact experts on this. So definitely seek out other voices in the community as well who are talking about it, because the more perspectives you get, the better. So we are just kind of one piece of the conversation.
And we're also both hella white. So like that's so we really kind of encourage seeking out other voices in the community, especially those who are Maori. So yeah.
Well, with that being said, definitely wanted to address it right up front, because it is important. There's no easy way to transition out of that, but I guess we will.
Why do we do it up front? Is the question, maybe? Because it's important to talk about first. That's why.
Yeah.
But yeah. There's no easy way to transition out of that and be like, wow, okay, and we're gonna talk about it.
Well, I guess we can start by saying, you know, it's been what, almost a year and a half since the Bad Batch season one ended, because it ended in what, like August of 2021. So about 15 months since the last time we've seen the Bad
really?
Batch. Yeah. Yep.
Wait a second.
That happens that long ago.
Oh God. Yeah. You know, when the year changes, my brain really falls apart. Cause somebody was like, and the High Republic is two. That's like the High Republic is what?
That was on our convergence episode.
Well, I don't think I processed it then, because I saw a tweet today and I was like, wait a freaking second. Are you kidding me? So like what? And then, I mean, I guess it makes sense because we saw the trailer and like the clip of the Bad Batch back in May.
Right. But, like, when we went to the panel.
Oh my God, time. Oh no, I'm like really, oh God, I'm really breaking apart right now. It's January.
Yeah. Yeah, oh. Time is going by. There's no real concept of it at this point.
So long since the first season. What? Yeah. What? Mm-hmm. Sorry, anyways. I'm really going through it over here on my side of the microphone.
Anyways, we're here 15 months or so later, and we're talking about season two. So, Sarah, I guess what were you kind of feeling going into the show, and were the Bad Batch getting on the top of your mind as we got closer to it? And now that you've seen the first two episodes, like, how are you feeling going into the season? Because I know you and I have had some conversations off air that it wasn't necessarily like the most kind of exciting, crazy episodes. But I think they're a little bit of like a, I don't know if you call them like palate cleanser, or kind of reintroduction to this crew, maybe before or ahead of like what could be a more intensive season around like the Empire and more clones and people like Cody. Because obviously the trailer had a lot, Gungi, right? Like there's a lot that's going to be happening.
Wookies.
Later
Brad
this season.
Brad texted me and was like, oh my gosh, Sarah's going to scream. He's like, Sarah, you're going to scream. And I was like, good scream or Brad scream? He's like, good scream. And then I kind of finished the episode and I was like, okay, there were no Wookiees, no Bail Organa, no Kay's Wrath device. What am I supposed to be screaming about? And you were like, AZI-3. And I was like, oh, I was delighted. But I was like, I was so expecting, you're like, oh, you're going to scream. And I was so expecting one of these big things, like Gungi shows up in episode one. And it didn't happen. I felt like you hyped it up a little bit for me. But to answer your question, the Bad Batch has not been on the top of my mind. And, you know, I think for me, season one was hit and miss. I think it was like a couple episodes too long. And so there was some good stuff, but also some stuff that just didn't really hit for me. But I was looking forward to season two because it kind of has the ability to fresh start and really kind of dive in. And I don't know if we're quite there yet, but, you know, I did enjoy the vibrancy of these episodes, and, you know, they were pretty action focused, which is kind of a good way to throw you back into the story and to help you reacquaint you with where they are. So that was exciting. Overall, you know, I don't think I left these two episodes going, oh my gosh, I need more Bad Batch in my life right now. You know, but I'm not upset to have them back as characters. I think Tech got some great moments specifically that I enjoyed in this two episodes. So overall, yeah, I would say that, like, I'm not upset about it, but my reaction isn't like, oh my God, the Bad Batch. So if that's what you're looking for, I'm so sorry you're not finding it here from me at the very least. I apologize for that. Hope you guys hang for our conversations because we do have some things to say. So yeah.
Totally. Like, even though we've talked about like unwhitewashed Bad Batch so far, which is like, you know, a definite huge criticism of the show. And even though we're not necessarily like super amped right off the bat, like you said, we are not here to just like,
oh no,
talk about all the things we don't like or whatever, right? Like, so we will talk about the things that need to be criticized or, you know, discussed, but we also want to talk about the things that do bring us joy, like whether it's Mucci from last season when we talked
about
Mucci, was so iconic, or you know, like Rex being back for a couple episodes that were pretty exciting. So there will be a lot of stuff, and like, we know Wookiee Jedi and Bail Organa are going to be in the season,
and
like,
also we've already seen them. Sidious.
Yeah, so like there are things that are right up our alley that I'm very, very excited about. So
the trailer The trailer was good. Like that's what I feel good about, is like there's going to be stuff in this season that I know I'm going to be really energized by. And also, like, to be clear, we never approach our conversations from a sense, even the things that we have liked the very least in all of Star Wars. It shall not be named. But like even that stuff, we really tried to have a balanced conversation about some of the things we did really like and then also didn't like. So we're never going to approach a conversation with, we hated this, you know, like it's just not worth covering at that point. So I'm looking forward to talking about the things that excited me and also talk about maybe things that don't hit for me as much. But there is some stuff like AZI-3 in this episode that delighted me. I'm so excited for more AZI-3.
Yeah. Well, because last season we left off with him, I had to go back and like rewatch the end of the episode where we unfortunately lose Topeka City?
Topeka City, yeah. Yeah.
Topeka City,
okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That remains heartbreaking, brutal, offensive, rude, saddening, upsetting, depressing, upset, sad, depressed, upset, sad, depressed, upset, sad, depressed.
Might be one of the most tragic Star Wars things that we've ever watched.
I'm literally so sad. I just love Kamino so much, and I love Tanwi and Lama Su. I love them, okay?
The Kaminoans. They're both dead, right? They both died.
Man. This is why I'm upset. Upset, sad, depressed.
End of an era.
You know, anyway.
Yeah. Well, anyway. I would say, much to your point, like those first two trailers were huge bangers. I will agree.
I wish there
was even more marketing done for the show ahead of its release, because there were some kind of weird things going on where, like, one day you could watch the trailer in the Disney Plus extras for The Bad Batch, and I'm like, I can't log into Disney Plus right now. Like, literally won't let me watch anything.
Oh yeah, that was not cute.
And that was really random. And then they like uploaded it a couple hours later in the day after it had already been like screen grabbed and stuff. So I do hope in the future that like other animation projects get a lot more like recognition and marketing ahead of the release, because like you and I love animation. Like I know we both love Rebels. Like we enjoyed Rebels quite a bit.
Rebels is great.
You didn't watch Clone Wars, but I showed you Siege of Mandalore and you're like, dude, oh shit. This
Siege of Mandalore,
great.
Holy moly, holy moly, holy moly. I've hardly seen anything else from the rest of the Clone Wars, but I have seen the Siege of Mandalore and it rocked my entire world. Anyway,
yeah.
And
Siege of Mandalore is awesome.
We should talk more about Siege of Mandalore on the podcast, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And we do love Resistance and we love Visions.
We love Resistance so much. I have to tell you, and I have to tell our listeners to divert to Resistance for 1 second. My lock screen has been Niku since the very first Remembering Resistance. I have not changed my phone lock screen since our 2020 Remembering Resistance. That's how much I love
Niku. I don't think you're
Niku.
Legally allowed to change it at this point.
I did almost change it to a member of BTS, but then I didn't, because how could I get rid of Niku?
Right.
Like, seriously, he's the love of my life.
Well, and speaking of Resistance too, I mean, The Bad Batch is a lot of Resistance alum.
That's true.
Jennifer Corbett being one of those, and Brad Rao as well. Mm-hmm. Which is another note I want to bring up as well. Like, I think as we talk about the show within the Star Wars community, I do think it is also very important to keep Jennifer Corbett's name in the conversation, because she is the showrunner, she is the head writer. And, you know, I think a lot of credit gets directed in other areas. And oftentimes, like, her and other people's efforts, like Matt McNevitz or Brad Rao, like, they kind of get left out of the conversation. So, like, huge credit to the team, because, like we said, like, even though Bad Batch isn't 100% like our jam and we're not like foaming at the mouth over it, we are still like very proud of like that Resistance team who has gone on from Resistance to now be doing this really cool story, like, with this group of clones and Omega, who is like the coolest. And I love
Omega
so much.
Is,
you know,
the coolest. She's the little sweetheart of my heart. Like, I just, I'm so glad we have her back. She's like my little sister. Like, I just love her.
Yeah. But overall, yeah, I enjoyed the first couple of episodes, and really action packed. I think the sequences looked really good. Like the shooting and the fights, and Wrecker, who is my favorite of the Bad Batch, had some fantastic lines in there, including, man, I make a pretty good tank.
That has like some serious, you know, Dave Bautista energy to it, like Dave Bautista as Drax, but like just like,
for sure,
Dave Bautista as a person.
or better yet, Wrecker meets Drax from Guardians in a Marvel Star Wars crossover.
Oh,
I want to see that happen.
That'd be all sorts of chaos.
Yeah. But anyways, that would be a lot of fun. But yeah, you mentioned Omega and how much we love her. So let's start there, I guess, in these episodes. Omega is much more grown up. She seemed right off the bat to be sort of in a teen angst phase where, you know, she's supposed to be studying. She's more skilled with her bow now. But she just sounds more grown up, and she looks more grown up with the longer hair and the armor and everything.
Yeah,
she got
a cute little outfit now.
Yeah.
I love her cute
And they
little
all
outfit.
Have a bit of a redesign too, like more yellows and oranges versus like the red and blacks of the first season.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about the design verse before we jump into character, because something that I found really interesting about these two episodes is, you know, because maybe the suits, the armor was much darker in the first season. These two episodes felt so much more vibrant, color-wise. So we do have the lighter armor with the orange, which debuted at Celebration, but also just throughout, I feel like we're getting more texture, like the sort of painted texture on their armor and on the surroundings, more so than we did in season one, which I really liked. And this season opening with this action sequence with the killer crabs on this beautiful planet great. With this ocean and all this like vibrant color was so refreshing to see. And it makes sense to me that it came from the Resistance team, which, you know, that show is just so bright and colorful that I really, really liked that about these two episodes, I will say.
Yeah, it looked beautiful. Like, the animation, honestly, is so great in this show. Like, I do still sometimes have criticisms, and I wish, like, the animation looks slightly different than the Clone Wars, because I'm kind of wondering, like, is this supposed to be for a Clone Wars grown adult audience? Especially because these episodes get pretty dark towards the end. So part of me is like, you know, what is the intended age range here? And you know, with that in mind, like with the animation style of the Clone Wars, which is also something that is darker.
Sure.
I do love diversifying though, like how animation looks, which is why Visions is such a nice breath of fresh air. But I still have to give it up for the Bad Batch because, you know, the whitewashing aside, like the rest of the show looks really good, and the environments look amazing. Some of the battle sequences that were happening in the dark, in the way that the lights of the lasers played off the armor and the environment. It honestly felt like I was watching live action at certain points. Like, it was that impressive. So, yeah, I think it looks awesome. Like, kudos to them. They definitely put more resources into it this time.
Totally. And I think just like lightening the armor itself just gives the whole, you know, crew like a different energy that I really like. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now we can go into character and let's talk about our girl Omega. Omega, our sweet baby girl, she doesn't want to study. She's having her teen angst phase. As we've mentioned, she's in a new outfit. They're back with Cid. And like, ultimately, it seems like after she overhears a conversation that she shouldn't hear about, you know, her responsibility or the responsibility that they have to her that they don't necessarily want, she feels like a lot of pressure. And is what kind of leads kind of the conflict here in the second episode. And I thought this was really thoughtfully done and also just showed how much like how she does fit in with the group, but how also she knows that she is different from the group. You know, she's much younger than all of them and she needs caring for in some ways. And, you know, she knows she needs a guardian, but she feels like a burden. And I think that's a message that like, I think it's a message that people can relate to. It's just like feeling like you don't fully belong or that you're a problem for somebody. So I really liked how she kind of went through this journey over these two episodes.
Yeah, she's in an interesting spot because I feel like the first season was more about protecting Omega and where does she fit in with the group in the short term? Like, you know, are we dropping her off somewhere? Is there a better home for her? And now it seems like the question is turning to, okay, like, what does our future with Omega look like? Are we going to find some place to all live together? Which, like, you know, I think somebody asks Hunter, like, you know, what would be a happy life for him? And he looks over at Omega. So clearly a happy life for Hunter would be with Omega, like caring for her and being a parental figure.
Being her dad.
Yeah, basically.
Omega and her dad's.
And for Omega overhearing this conversation, she is worried that like maybe she isn't going to now be a part of the future picture, which is sort of the focus now. Like, what does our future look like versus now I'm already fitting in with the rest of the Bad Batch, but like, am I a burden in the long term? Kind of like you're saying. And also too, like there's definitely a clear shift in priority with protecting Omega because they definitely have everybody's best interests and safety in mind, but it feels like now she's able to go in with them on missions. Like they go into this planet in the second episode or first episode, and she's just right there with them, right?
They're
they
go to
Sereno. They're at Sereno, yes.
Let's be like super clear. We're on Sereno. We're getting Count Dooku's war chest.
Yeah, I yelped when they said Sereno. I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to Sereno. This is insane. But yeah, seeing her just in the mission and there's not really like a question of, hey, stay on the ship. Hey, stay on the ship. You know, and that was a lot of the first season. Mm. And then obviously shenanigans would happen and she would end up off the ship and they'd have to rescue her. Right. So it's nice to see her fending for herself at this point and just kind of fitting in with the rest of them as soldiers, which I love.
Yeah. And it seems like they really kind of accept her or, you know, like value her contribution to the team. More so, and that like she has a little bit more autonomy within the team in that sense. And I like that glow up a little bit. It does make me wonder what the time jump is between the first season and this season. I don't think we have a really clear idea of that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either because I got the impression that they've been doing a lot more jobs for Cid. Mm-hmm. And that they're sort of nearing a debt that they want to pay up to her and sort of be out and have enough credits to live on their own. She did make a comment too that's like, you know, it's only a matter of time until the Empire finds me, so you better get going with your mission and get all the credits while you still can. I think that's definite foreshadowing. I think the jig will be up this season with Cid and the rest of that operation. Do you kind of get that feeling, that gut feeling that just, you know, good things can't last forever? And that's not necessarily a good thing that they're doing these missions. They don't want to have to do them, but it's gotten them by, you know, but it's not forever lasting.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not foreshadowing, I would be shocked because we know that we're getting more of the Empire and we know that you know, like there's gonna be issues. Like the end of the second episode is interesting with regards to the fate of the Bad Batch in the eyes of the Empire. I think that's definitely going to change for Rampart and for the Empire. Somebody's gonna get themselves in trouble because they did not reveal that Bad Batch was actually walking and talking still.
Well, and the big question too is like, where's Crosshair? Like, what's he up to?
Where's Crosshair?
Because if Crosshair escaped,
the big question.
If Crosshair escaped and is back with the Empire and Rampart is now catching wind that Clone Force 99 survived, like he's gonna have to connect the dots.
Okay. Can I tell you the honest to goodness truth here?
Sure.
I completely forgot Crosshair existed until you just mentioned him because I was so focused in on our good boy team and not our bad boy. But you know, now that I think of him, I'm like, oh, I remember the voice, Crosshair.
Well, so, and as we kind annoying. Of are wondering, like, what's going to be the sticking point for us with this season? Like, what's going to really reel us in? I think it is Crosshair. Because we leave him at the end of the first season, like, pretty devastated, standing on that lone platform, watching his friends fly off without him. So
well,
it's like,
he doesn't want to go with them.
Yeah. And we know Cody's back in the picture this season with Crosshair. It's going to be really interesting.
That's going to be spicy as hell. Like, that's going to be interesting. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, Crosshair, he's probably the biggest question mark at this point because at the end of this episode we do get that, oh, they're dead, whereas he's pretty much alive and he's kind of an antagonist, he's kind of an antagonist to our team but also somebody that they deeply care about still, probably, even despite everything that happened in last season. So there's like, oh, it's a complicated situation, and I really like a complicated relationship. It makes the content exciting. So
even though we're starting out with the sort of typical heist for Cid of the week, like we kind of did a few of those last season,
we did
again, I sort of see this as like a refresher to the group. And then the end of that second episode, like with Rampart and with Wilco, which like Wilco was such a cool clone, came and went way too soon. You know, he seemed like a good soldier. He seemed loyal.
He's hella dead. And I mean, like, shot him off a cliff sort of.
Dead. We got the shot. I was like, wait, is that him falling? I was like, that's brutal.
I was like, that's so brutal. That, and then LOL, the Empire thinks they got him. Got the Bad Batch. And I was like, oh, Wilco's not going to falsify the report. Yay, Wilco. He's going to stand up for what's right. And then Rampart just murders him. And I am like, oh my God, this is what we talk about. Like what we talked about in Andor, when it's like the idea that, like, I think it was Nemec who said this, like these things take constant work. and that's their ultimate downfall, is because it's more about the appearances for them than it is about like actually, it's the illusion of control. It's like the fear of losing control that motivates them, as opposed to like leading, if that makes sense. And like, that's what's happening here. Like, Rampart knows and Wilco knows that Clone Force 99 still poses a threat, but because of how things were written up before, because of how things were reported, they're dead and we're not going to let anybody know that they're alive. And it's like, wow, that's so messy. And it also just says, not that they should, you know, I'm not here to say that the Empire should succeed. I certainly don't feel that, but you can really see the cracks in the facade and the ways that they get themselves into trouble, because they're so much more concerned about appearances than they are about their own substance.
It goes back to Kino Loy when he tells Cassian power doesn't panic, right? And so Rampart cutting a loose end that knows about Clone Force 99 is him avoiding the panic. If he needs to seem powerful, like you said, he has to put up a face. Like, I got to eliminate any trace of this that I can.
Right.
Because like, if Crosshair is still in the picture, I don't need Crosshair to panic, even though Crosshair knows. But like, does Rampart know Crosshair knows? That's the big question. And we can't let the rest of Tarkin panic, right? That's Rampart's point, is like, if Tarkin hears about this.
Oh, it was Tarkin. Yes.
That's the big downfall for me. Like, that's my kryptonite there. So if I don't please him, that's my reputation and my status pretty quick.
Yeah, we all know what happens when you cross Tarkin. You get exploded by your own laser. Okay. That's what happens.
Right. Or he takes your project and then he stands there upon your achievements.
And then he explodes you with your own. Then he explodes you with your own laser.
Yeah. 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 Oh, man. I do want to mention, too, it was really awesome having Cid back, like hearing her nicknames for the Bad Batch crew. You had Echo as Killjoy, Hunter, Dark and Broody. But also Wanda Sykes was in the first episode, guest starring as Fee Genoa, and she was flirting with Tech. She called him Brown Eyes, which I've only ever heard Brown Eyes referred to Din Djarin. Our daddy, Pedro Pascal, true daddy of Star Wars.
Our daddy? Don't speak
when
for
I
me.
Say our, I'm speaking for the fandom. He's everybody's daddy, yeah.
I mean, that's true, but like we have met Oscar Isaac, is all I am saying.
Yeah, but pull the clip of Pedro Pascal in the lie detector test when he goes, "I'm your daddy." Was specifically asked about, is him or Oscar more of a daddy? Anyways, but yeah, I loved Tech, though, when he starts getting flirted with. He's like all scientific. He's like, well, brown eyes are part of the clone DNA. And,
yeah.
You know, we all have brown eyes. And she's like, okay, that was fun while it lasted.
You know, I think Tech has some really good moments in these two episodes. You know, Tech was kind of used as the robot character of, you know, the droid character in the first season. And I don't feel like he got to be his full self. And I feel like we got some more personality from him within his absolute nerdiness. He did, you know, he was like, and I have a fracture in my femur about like a fourth an inch up or what. Like, and I was like, bro, you do not have to get technical about your own leg break 2 seconds after it happened. But I thought that was a good moment too from him. So I liked these moments from him. They didn't feel out of place or unfunny or out of character in a demeaning way, you know?
I was low-key worried about Tech. Like, when his leg broke and I was starting to get...
broke his femur.
Yeah, like, I was like getting flashbacks to Nemec, like when all those crates were getting thrown around as they descended into the planet's atmosphere. I was like, oh God, somebody's going to get Nemec'd here. Like, this is just not looking good. But I'm glad he made it out. I was seriously concerned about his health. But I do want to mention, in like the Runes of War episode, we do get a new character, Romar Adele, who's played by Hector Elizondo. Him and Tech kind of have this interesting conversation when he brings up like a Model 2 data core from the basement that holds a lot of stuff about Serenian art, culture, history, science, math, all that stuff. And Tech is able to rework it and power it back up. And he's like, oh my gosh, this has so many separatist secrets or whatever. And Romar is like, not separatist, Serenian. Like, we did exist before the war, you know? And Tech says, I never thought of it that way. What did you make of that conversation, because I think that's definitely speaking to the way in which, like, and we've talked about this quite a bit within Star Wars, like how histories are rewritten and how entire cultures and peoples are completely taken over by the Empire and like the Empire's uniformity, and how the uniqueness of culture is like lost under this sort of fascist regime that's running the galaxy. And like, obviously, like people like Romar are the ones who suffer for it. He calls himself a survivor, right? Like he's like, I'll get by, I'm a survivor. And it's unfortunate that he has to live that kind of life, that he has to classify himself that way as opposed to us Arrhenian first and foremost. What did you make of that?
I really, really liked this conversation. I think the addition of Romar as a character in this really brings us down to earth in terms of what we are thinking about when we think of Sereno. You know, when we think about Sereno, probably think about, are there Clone Wars episodes that take place on Sereno?
Yeah, there are. So, right? Like, when we go into Dooku's big chamber.
I remember that. Yeah. Okay.
Lots of fights in there between Dooku, Anakin, and Obi-Wan.
Right. So, like, we get Sereno when it comes to animation, and specifically Count Dooku throughout the prequels and animation, and into Dooku Jedi Lost, and then into this episode is kind of where, like, our Sereno storylines, I think, exist. And I think we think a lot about Count Dooku specifically, and we think a lot about the royal family or whatever on Sereno, the ruling families. And we don't think about the everyday people. Like, it's at the end of the day, a planet that is made up of very normal people who are just trying to live their lives on the place they were born or maybe the place they came to. And I think Romar is a great example of that, and really brought a human side to this. So when Tech makes this assumption and classifies this artifact, this history, in terms of the war as opposed to the people, and Romar corrects them and says, no, this is about the people and not about the war, nor is it about anybody else's agenda. It's just about the people. I think that does work for both Tech, pushes him a bit to see things differently, and I also think it does work for the audience to open their minds a bit and say, hey, consider that there are other things going on this planet, other people on this planet that are struggling in these situations. And like, I think it has I think it does good work is my point. And whenever we can be reminded that this war affects the everyday people too, and that all the actions that we're seeing from the Senate and from the clones and from the Republic and from the Empire, they affect real people. So stories like Andor, I remember like the chapter titles of Victory's Price in Part One, Songs from Forgotten Worlds, like stuff like that brings us a little bit closer to home, and home are people. So yes, I have just monologued for a while there, but thanks for listening. What did you like this as well, Brad? I don't know if you shared your opinion before I started monologuing and just asking the question. I apologize.
Yeah, no, I loved it because I think it was really an important perspective for Tech to gain.
Yes.
But also, Romar illustrated too, like the idea of like where Dooku got his wealth from. And it wasn't just the war that he was perpetrating on the outskirts of Sereno, but that he was also taking the wealth from his own planet and like stealing it from, you know, lower class people. And the wealth was never trickling down. It was kind of just being hoarded within his own circle or within his own tower. And, you know, that's not entirely unlike our own world, right? Like the ways in which the wealthy can kind of hoard that wealth and keep it away from the rest and make it inaccessible. But I thought that was very interesting, just in the ways in which Dooku was presented and remembered by his people, and that he was somebody who was a war criminal and also like an exploiter and one of the kind of like top 1%er elitist snobs who is like apparently the Jeff Bezos of the Star Wars galaxy.
The Jeff Bezos of the Star Wars galaxy and also manufacturing a war at the same time. Like,
right, yeah.
Right. And, you know, like rules a planet. So like there's like a lot of people that are directly affected.
Yeah. And Echo has the point that he says, you know, that's what corrupt people do. And Omega asks him, but isn't that what we're doing? And then he says, depends on how we use it.
Yeah.
Which brings up another interesting point. Yeah. Because it's like, well, is it the means to an end sort of thing? Like what's the end goal? But I thought that was really a good quote from Echo there, which Echo had a really good show of character in this episode too. In these episodes, I don't know if you kind of saw that with him as well, but he had some good conversation with Omega too at the end when he's like, you know, if we hadn't found you, like we would be still fighting for the Empire or worse. So like, thank you for coming into our lives. So even though you think you're a burden, like, trust me, you're not, because we would have been way worse off without you. Like you brought out the best side of us.
I think that was really like an important conversation for them to have, because clearly there is a misunderstanding about, you know, or not misunderstanding, but just, you know, Omega knows that she is not an original, you know, member of this group. She knows that she's somebody new here and that she requires different things than they do. And that puts them in a new position. And I think that maybe they aren't considering that in the same way that she is. And so kind of to level with one another and to understand each other a little bit better, why she's hunting so hard for the treasure from this war chest and why, you know, they're fighting so hard for her, is a really important moment for both of them. And I hope that will extend to the rest of the batch throughout the season.
It also feels like a moment that would have typically been reserved for Hunter that they gave to Echo, which I appreciated, because Hunter has had a lot the true dad
moment,
dad to daughter moments. And I really feel like this was such an important thing for Echo, because I think a lot of our criticism last season was like Echo wasn't written the best. I kind of feel like he was always
Echo and Tuck
lingering in the background and not really having his moment. And he had a couple of good ones here, especially too with Hunter, when he talks to Hunter and says like, I don't want to run, like the time for running is over. Like, I don't want to hide. I want to do more. There are people out there like us or like Omega who like need our help. Right.
Right.
It's like, who could benefit from our services and our expertise? Like, we're the Bad Batch. We're 99 because we have a 99% success rate or whatever. Right. Like, that's how good we are. So who can we help? And I'm hoping that Echo continues to be that voice of reason and maybe gets them to take on some more risks for the greater good. And like, maybe down the line, they join the rebellion. Who knows?
That'd be cool as hell. I would like to see it.
With that kind of line of thinking in mind, like doing something bigger than themselves, like, do you have any bold predictions in terms of like what kind of impact they could make? Because my mind immediately jumps to taking Cody's chip out. I think that's like the most important thing. I think Cody's still a goner at the end of the day, because he's not with like Rex and Wolf and Gregor and Rebels, but I do think he will be liberated in some sense.
I think that would be a really interesting idea. And I think that we all want to see that, because over the prequels, we really kind of became quite fond of Cody. And we all know what happens there, and it's kind of devastating when it does. I don't know if I have any bold predictions. I'm excited to know, you know, like, or to figure out where this season is taking us and to see what impact they do make, because we know that they can, and we know that they have a desire to, and I think with Omega at the heart and at the core of this group, she'll bring a lot of forward momentum to them.
Yeah, and notably too, they were only shooting stuns at the other clone troopers. I want to make note of that as well. They weren't shooting blaster bolts. So I do think they still have an empathy for the clones, and I would not be surprised if sort of the like clone trooper rebellion, clone trooper, the clone trooper liberation, like something that we would have liked to have seen with Finn and the stormtroopers.
Yes.
Maybe that's their path. And I think maybe that's something that Echo wants to do. Echo's a good one. Echo is a really good one. I love him.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And I hope he has more moments like this in the season, because like, he deserves it. He's been through so much too. And I imagine him going back to Sereno after sort of turning into who he is because of like Dooku and the Separatists and Watt Tambor, who ran those experiments on him in the Clone Wars arc.
Watt Tambor.
Yeah. So I got to imagine this mission also felt very personal for Echo because of what he had to go through at the hands of Count Dooku.
Totally. Totally.
One final thing I want to ask you.
Yeah.
The kaleidoscope that Omega gets.
Yeah.
I want to like, I'm trying to like think of the symbolism behind that maybe, or like what the purpose of the kaleidoscope is. And like, obviously like a kaleidoscope is something you look into and, you know, like it sees a lot of bright colors and it's sort of a reflection of the outer world inward, sort of into your own eyes through like a different lens, kind of distorts the world in like beautiful color. Did you have any thinking behind like Omega receiving that object? Because that obviously is an object of great importance to Romar, that he says like, you know, it's worth more than you might even realize. So like maybe that's something that was passed down within his family. But to me, it kind of represented like that there's still beauty in the world and that maybe somebody like Omega can find it if she just looks hard enough. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm like rewatching this scene right now. And I think the fact that we get an image of the kaleidoscope as she's looking into it, and also he's like, you know, it's a toy. It makes you happy. That's more important than any jewel. I mean, I think that's kind of the message here, is like loving and being loved and being part of a community, et cetera, are more important than like the treasure or the payout or any of these things. It's that their bond is more important than anything that they could come across. And I also think that it's a reminder that Omega is a kid and she's got to maintain a sense of wonder and a sense of curiosity. And I think that the kaleidoscope can provide that sense of wonder and that sense of curiosity for people of any age, because they're just so new. They feel so novel every time you get to enjoy one.
Yeah, that was a really wholesome, unexpected moment in the episode that was, you know, again, like step back from all the action and just have a moment where she can kind of be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just really touching, and I'm excited to see like if that becomes like a recurring thing for her, like just finding those sort of moments of solace
in
childhood, you know, because like you said, don't grow up too fast, you know, like Omega, we've seen her grown up between seasons 1 and 2, but living as a kid in the galaxy is not easy, as we know from like, you know, Generoso being raised by Saw Gerrera, right? So like Omega doesn't necessarily, she needs to kind of maintain some of that childlike wonder despite like what's being asked of her and like how fast she has to grow up because of her circumstance. It's a lot in the galaxy far, far away.
The galaxy far, far away does not give young ones the best life most of the time.
Right. Well, did you have any final thoughts on these two episodes before we start to wrap things up here?
No, honestly, I feel like I've said all my thoughts. I look forward to kind of seeing where the season goes and kind of where it takes us. I'm looking forward to Gunji and Bail Organa and Emperor Palpatine.
Oh yeah.
Are we getting also Mos Eisley and or Slymore? That's just a question I'm asking. It's just a question. Ooh. I'm just thinking about it.
That could be interesting.
Since we didn't get the Slymore showing up at the dinner party.
You know, I got to say though, like I'm most excited for Bail Organa and Gunji.
I mean, like that's not a surprise. This is us running this podcast. I literally have a Wookiee display behind me and we like our Bail Organa's number 2 stands. We're under Eric. I've accepted that at this point. It's been a tough road to kind of accept that I might be less of a Bail stan than Eric Eilerson, but I think it's true. Eric, if you're listening, love you, man.
Can you believe though that we've gotten Bail Organa? Well, actually we've gotten Jimmy Smits 3 years in a row, because 2021 we got Into the Heights. 2022 we got Obi-Wan Kenobi. 2023 we got The Bad Batch. So, you know. And guess what we're getting in 2024? Andor season 2.
And you're so convinced that he's going to show up.
He is showing up in Andor season 2.
He's got to, but like if he doesn't, I'm not
putting
my hopes up, okay? Like if he doesn't, like I can't be... Anyway.
They said, Jimmy Smits, come shoot Andor season 2 in 2022 so we can get it all on the same W2 for you. Like just get the scenes done right now. Let's get them done. We don't want to have to file another one next year for
you. Right. Keep you on the payroll. That's so funny. I love Jimmy Smits's Bail Organa. I really can't wait. We know this. This is really important to me. He is my dad. And I would do anything for him, honestly. Can we just say that like, if he ever did a photo op, like I'm going. I just want to make that really clear for the people. I have to meet my dad.
If he shows up at Celebration London, I will be heartbroken without you there. I will be dead.
Dude, if that happens, I'm gonna be so upsetty spaghetti.
I'm gonna book you a red eye. Also shout out to
Spirit Airlines.
Shout out to Phil Lamar, who voices Bail Organa in the Clone Wars.
Yes.
And I'm assuming also in Star Wars Rebels, so I'm assuming he will be voicing in the Bad Batch, because he was also Tales of the Jedi as well. So yeah,
absolutely. What are your final thoughts, Brad? You asked me for mine, I want yours.
Yeah, my final thoughts are that this episode was, I think, a good reintroduction into the characters, and I'm just more excited to really get into the thick of the season and see what the next four episodes are all about. Three to four episodes that we're going to be covering all at once, and it'll be interesting for us to kind of view the season having more of the bigger picture all at once versus like waiting week to week, and how that might affect our opinions on the season and kind of watching the story played out in larger chunks. So I'm excited and hopefully we'll get to watch those very soon. So
yes,
once we find time.
Also yes.
But that is about it for us here on the podcast. We hope you enjoyed this first episode of The Bad Batch season 2, and we got plenty more to come. If you want to hear more from the podcast, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube and Hive. You can also find Sarah and I on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Goodreads to find out what we're saying, what we're watching, and what we're reading. And let me tell you, new year, new Letterboxd, Goodreads goals. What's your Goodreads goal this year? I think I asked you this last year on the first episode.
I'll be really honest in saying that like I haven't set one, because I stopped reading in September almost entirely. And I hit my Goodreads goal, but barely. Like, I would have blown it out of the water last year if I had kept reading, and I just didn't. So I think we're going to lower it this year. I might go back to 52 books a year, which is a book a week, theoretically. Hopefully that'll be adequate. We also want to let you know that it is a new year. We have new goals for the Patreon. We are so excited to record some exciting Patreon content this month. It's happening, our friends. So get ready for that. If you are interested in newsletters and schedules, that's at our $1 tier. Extra episodes and things are at our $2 tier. We are endlessly grateful for all of our patrons who have joined us thus far, whether you joined us for a couple months, whether you've joined us for many, many months at this point. We are like seriously incredibly grateful. It's real humbling. So thank you very much to all of our patrons, and especially to our newest patron, Ben. Thank you so much for joining us. We're glad to have you here. And thank you seriously to everyone who takes time out of their day to listen to us ramble about Star Wars. We very, very much appreciate it. I hope that you have had a wonderful new year full of joy and hope and good food and a reasonable, vague New Year's resolution. Don't put too much stress on yourself.
We have a lot in store this year. We hope you decide to join us on the journey ahead, because it's going to be a special one. That's all for now. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, may the Force be with you always.